and we are live. Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. And this is the Round 12 live recap. I'm Jacob Wynn. He's the Padonis. We had a pretty good week. I mean, we had our most best bets of the year, 7 best bets, which we ended up going 5-2 on. We won the mixed matchup by 30 points. We won a multi paying $9, which was our first official pod multi that got up. And yet, I've got to be honest, I'm still a bit salty. I'm still a bit frustrated with how that round went. And it's probably just on the back of a couple of multis that fell short today. And we had a 32-1 head-to-head multi that went down with the Bulldogs. Talk about that. You know, if you just look at the score, they lost by 10, but they really were in that game seriously in that second half there. But we'll get to that. That actually, the first half and the start of the Dogs was what cost the 5 guys multi. And that was, I think, Padonis, about 18 or 19-1. And that was the only losing leg. So we're mourning that multi as well. We're mourning near misses. You know, that's how it goes with multis. One game can mean so much more than, you know, just any other random regular game when a big multi hinges on it. And not our way this weekend. And as part of the 5 guys, if you're the only unsuccessful leg, you got to do a shoey, but you've negotiated. You're just going to drink some vodka live on the show. Is that right?
That's right. So I've got my vodka here. Everyone that can see that. I was the only losing leg this week, unfortunately. I had the Dragons Dogs game. I had Dogs plus 2.5 in the first half. And sometimes that's the way it goes. We had our 5 best bets. That was the best line and odds on Dabble at the time. So unfortunately, it falls short. We could have won 4 so far, but here we go. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, Padonis. Yeah, and I go back to last week where we went 1-2, but I really feel like we might have been on the right side of all 4 games. And we might have been again this week in all 5 games to go 5-2. One good thing is we've been quite selective. We've stayed patient. We've had a really frustrating season, and the frustration didn't stop this round. Go on, man up, mate. And yet, the one good thing, I suppose, is we've been very selective whenever we've gone for 2 best bets on a game. And people do ask us often, what's your favorite best bet of the round? Things like this nature. And I hate to ever say, because I don't want to give, you know, people permission to load up on a bet. But if we give you 2 best bets on one game, you can take that as us being extra confident, or we wouldn't do it. And every game we've done that, we have gone 2-0 when we've gone for the double best bet. So, like, at least I'm grateful for that. Going to get a market update and obviously recap all the games, but Origin teams. Queensland's going to drop tomorrow. There's already news information leaking out, whispers, you know, whether it's confirmed or not. I'm hearing for Queensland, Padonis, they're saying Lindsay Collins going to get the start. People weren't sure if he'd done enough, but they're going with Lindsay Collins. Apparently, Cotter will start. Nanai. Sorry, Cotter, I'm not sure if he's starting, but he will get a jersey. Nanai going to be in the team as well, is what I'm hearing. I don't know if you've heard anything else or have any strong opinions on the Queensland team, which will be officially released tomorrow.
I haven't heard too much about the Queensland team because that's always about 24 hours later than the Blues team. But yeah, they had to change up something, and they've got some exciting kids in there. So definitely great reward for those Cowboys guys that have been playing well all season. And the other one I heard is Vaud Holmes is likely to get his center spot back, which will be just rewards for him also.
I'd expect that. And then who would your wingers be? I actually put my team out and we had opportunity. A couple of people in our group are going to win a 50 each thanks to Toppy. And I was splitting hairs. I actually didn't put Cobbo in my team. I went Taulungi because I expected Val Holmes would be in the center. And I just thought you got, you know, second best defensive side in the comp. Taulungi's played 40 games compared to Cobbo 10. He's actually sneakily just about as big and strong and can finish just as well. And I just thought that combination there could get him over the edge. But then Cobbo was outstanding again on Friday night. I would not be mad at all if Billy goes with Cobbo. Who would you have?
Well, as a Brisbane fan, I hope it's Taulungi as well, because I don't want Cobbo there. But in saying that as well, that'll be great for him, just rewards for him so far in the year. And it will give him some confidence and form. I think he's a form winger in the comp right now, so I think he has to play. But I take your point on the combination there with Vaud Holmes. But yeah, the rest of the side, it's pretty much going to be the same as what last year was. I'm a bit surprised that Collins is going to start. I thought Flegler would have got a run given his form with the Broncos. But That's another one that's pretty up for debate as well, I think.
Yeah, I think like Flegler's coming off the bench. I think you got to be super outstanding to be playing off the bench at an NRL level, but then make an Origin side. Actually, I also heard Carrigan will be in the side, which I would have picked him starting lock. But if, let's say, Collins is starting, if that's true, Papali'i is going to be your other starting prop. Tino is going to be starting, so he'll be your lock. So then Carrigan must be in there off the bench. This will be confirmed tomorrow. But it's good news for Queensland that we do come into the season. And I say we, sorry. Obviously, I'm a staunch Queenslander. You're a New South Welshman. You're a bit of a confused man, obviously, a Broncos fan as well, to be honest. But it's good news for Queensland that we go into this series feeling we have a chance. You know, there's no Trbojevic. We don't like there to be injuries and stuff, but that's one, you know, advantage for Queensland. None of our major gun players are out. We lost Christian Welsh tragically in round one, but we're close to full strength from Queensland perspective. And obviously the Queensland side's going so well, notwithstanding the Cowboys result on Friday, but both of those sides, Brisbane and North Queensland, did have 5-game winning streaks prior to that. And we will talk about that Cowboys result. If I can, I actually put up the rumoured New South Wales team and see if you can see this as well. And you guys let us know what you think. So, been released by Michael Chamas. And the first surprise is Tupou supposedly getting Adokar's wing spot, which is a bit of a surprise because Adokar's done such a good job for New South Wales over the years. But you can understand it too, that they could be worried about Queensland picking big wingers and aerial threats, and whereas Tupou suddenly becomes a weapon as well as being able to mitigate that. Sticking with Cook, I did put my team and I made the case, I'd go Coruscant, who's in the extended squad, if this is true, for the club combination. But again, you've got Cook, he's an incumbent. South's bounced back on the weekend. Sims, you know, I didn't pick him in my 17, but here he's a starting second row. Again, I think incumbency, and he hasn't been bad. Murray came back from injury this week. Frizzell has had a bit of a bad run of injuries, but maybe did enough on the weekend. Plus, you know, you had guys like Daniel Saifidi injured on Saturday, so maybe that opened up a spot. Oh, the other one that I thought was notable was no Jake Trbojevic and no Liam Martin, if this team is correct, but honest.
Yeah, mate. I actually think that Tupou, they probably put him in there as a direct person to counteract what Selwyn Cobbo can do. So it almost feels like...
And Xavier Coates.
And Xavier Coates as well, who's been scoring some tries for Melbourne, but less impressive. And I think Coates is more prone to making those defensive errors, which you can't have in Origin. But I think Adokar's form has been a bit up and down, so I'm not totally surprised, but I would have expected him to be there just because they have won a few series with him and he is so lethal in space. I am surprised Tarik Sims is there, like yourself. He hasn't even been starting for the Dragons recently, so he's a bench player in Clubland at the moment, so that's a bit of a shock. Jake Trbojevic, I'm not totally shocked because there's a few players that have gone past him in the last 2 years, namely Yao and Cam Murray. But Cam's so versatile that he doesn't just have to play lock. He can play on an edge as well, which is key for him. And the other one, shout out to Nico Hines for getting that 14 jersey. There was some talk it might have been Pappenhausen. I wouldn't have been completely against that either, but I think Hines can cover a bit more positions and he's a bit more versatile in the back line if they do get some injuries. But I think overall it's a pretty strong team, obviously missing two of our stars from last year in Latrell Mitchell and Turbo. But I think good on Stags for making the side, as well as that Penrith connection with Crichton. I think there's still a strong team across the park and it's going to be a great series.
Yeah, they had plenty of depth in the centre, so everyone pretty much figured out that Stags and Crichton had done enough to get those centre spots, and they actually play centre, you know, for their clubs, whereas not that someone like Turbo, as we've seen before, he doesn't let you down. I mean, Pappenhausen maybe would have got the utility, you know, was he not injured? The other guy who was well and truly in that debate was Jack White, who hasn't really done much wrong, and Raiders were pretty impressive today, even though they went down, whereas the Sharkies upset, another game we'll speak about. But Nico Hines, I guess his form undeniable, and you've got to think, obviously, the utility. You've got so many good players that already start in your back line, so it's not necessarily that you're going to put him on to replace any of them, but it's you just don't know who's going to get an HIA, who could get an injury. With Nico, you know, he can play fullback. I know Jack White's a former fullback, but I feel like Nico is probably the better fullback at this point in time. If you lose that position, obviously covers halves, and can cover kind of outside back. I mean, you couldn't have gone wrong with either of them. And Jack White, it looks to be, is in the extended squad. But if Freddie's gone with Nico, probably that slightly more X factor that if New South Wales are down, need to chase the game, Nico's maybe that guy who you can inject. But let us know your thoughts, guys, on the Queensland teams. Yeah, Blanche Darman says Bulldogs will ruin your rep career. And there's truth to that for sure, that there's players that play on sides that don't win enough games. It's so much harder unless they're just absolutely undeniable at their position. It's very hard to make a team. Jake Trbojevic, yeah, you're right. There's better locks than him, and there's two in the New South Wales side. So I would have picked him as a prop, if anything. But that's not the position he plays for his club. And they've gone other options like, Madison can probably play in the middle or on an edge. And then Regan Campbell-Gillard as well has been really good and makes the interchange bench. If that team is to be believed, we'll see. People can let us know. But I suggest usually the news comes out. There's no reason for people to make it up. Like, I think Adokar's probably been notified that he's not in the team, and that's why that story broke earlier today. But keen to hear you guys' thoughts. We'll definitely put together some more Origin content. Maybe we're talking to the Five guys about collaborating with them, get their tips. Some of the boys are on fire. Benny, 7 out of 8 same game multis, safe same game multis this weekend. And as we said, 4 out of 5 legs on the Five guys multi as well. All right, but let's talk about what we learned in the highest scoring round of the year, round 12, most tries of any round. 5 of the 6 games went over after the first two were unders. And as I say, 5 and 2 on our best bets, which is pretty solid. Actually, before we talk about each game and what we learned, let's hear how the book went.
Hello, Tripod family. Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. And a fascinating weekend that we've just had where the Storm and Seagulls started the round and there was a lot of money for the Storm and they covered duly. And then the Panthers-Cowboys game, which is 1v2 on the ladder. Penrith were back from 10.5 out to 14.5 and very heavily supported at that game day betting, which is where the money really ramps up. And probably the Cowboys, the best defensive effort I've ever seen for a team beat by 22, but they just weren't in the same stratosphere as Penrith, unfortunately. From our point of view, the punters were very happy with that. Saturday night, the punters all lobbed on the winners there, and so it was a pretty sick old weekend up until Sunday, where surprisingly, from our point of view, we had a good result on the Bulldogs-Dragons game, where the Bulldogs very heavily backed at the plus, which got us a little bit back from the weekend. There was a few multis running through there, and they were at halftime in the Parramatta-Canberra game, where there was a bit of a split of money there. So some quality games. I think we saw the cream rise to the top with Penrith and Melbourne both winning quite comfortably. So there's a bit of a logjam down there in those sort of 6th through to 12th spots. So we'll see how that pans out over the next couple of weeks. We've got Origin teams getting announced shortly. So looking forward to that. We'll looking forward to a big game there next Wednesday. So hope you're back to winner over the weekend, and we'll chat soon.
Speaking of cream rising to the top, I mean impressive wins by the Roosters and the Eels this weekend as well. But it began in Melbourne with, as I bring that up, 28-8. Win by the home side, Melbourne Storm, over the Manly Seagulls, where Harry Grant didn't play. Jerome Hughes did come back, but Pedonis, it was Munster who stole the show and the ball a couple times too.
Yeah, Munster was absolutely dynamite in this one. And he's really created an art form out of those 1v1 strips. So a lot of players will be watching his film to try to replicate that over the last few years. But no, Munster was great, as were the entire Melbourne side, and we did lean towards them on Wednesday, just couldn't find enough of an edge, given that there was doubt around Jerome Hughes. And then day after, we would have been well relieved had we have did taken the minus, because on game day, there was a pullout from Harry Grant.
Yeah, and the line was like about minus 13.5 range on Wednesday. We're like, well, there's no point playing Melbourne now. It's no certainty all those key guys are going to play. I think it closed 11.5, didn't it?
It did close 11.5, which is about fair, because Harry Grant's probably worth about 2.5, 3. And there was some doubt around Hughes as well, but Melbourne were clinical, and Manly have equaled an unwanted club record. I think it was 6 straight games now they've conceded 20 or more, which is not where the side should be, especially for a side like them that had aspirations of making the grand final this year. But their season is on life support now, and with some of those Origin affected players coming to fruition the next few weeks, it's going to be tough for them to regain any momentum. And just to make the 8, I think, will be an achievement for them, given where they're at the moment.
Yeah, and this was always going to be a tough one. You felt like maybe they have a chance with the Storm out. So it was pretty competitive, and I felt like Manly were hurting themselves with errors and with penalties. Desi's had a different view on it, that the penalties weren't their doing. But 12-4 to the Storm at halftime. you know, it's still competitive. And then Coates just skies and grabs a bomb over Tafua's head. And, you know, and then two sets later, the Storm comes back down. Munster strips the ball. They nearly score. They didn't quite score. They got put over the sideline. Very next set, Munster strips the ball again and scores. And that's bang, bang. It's 24-4. It's game over at that point. Next game, we did have a best bet and we lost. And this was a tough one to take. But we had the Panthers to score over 4.5 tries. After debating in depth what the best angle of attack in this game was, because we felt Penrith would be far too strong for the Cowboys. We got that part right. To say they won 22-0 at home in a game that was first versus second, or first versus third, or probably first versus third by then, because Melbourne had got another 2 points. And yeah. Penrith, while they couldn't get 5 tries put on us, of course they got 4, they were pretty near perfect.
Penrith were absolutely phenomenal, and that's why it's a bit annoying that the play we chose wasn't the best execution for this game. Could have had Cowboys unders, first half line, second half line. They all would have cashed except for the one we actually took. And have you ever seen a game where a team has had 2,100 running meters? I don't think I've seen one for a while. And it just goes to show the dominance, the sets on the line. The Cowboys held on grimly in that second half. All it felt was that one try was going to come and then it was going to be a 3 or 4. That's what it felt like. But it was 16-0 for so long that it wasn't our night, even though the Cowboys were held to a shutout and Panthers were dominant. And I feel like, and you posted in the group as well, that first half play where Targo somehow bombs it. If he scores there, it's probably all over. But yeah, one of those frustrating watches.
In a competition where the wingers every week leave your jaw dropped at how they were able to finish some of these tries, he was so lazy and he dived left arm first when he knew he was right by the sideline and muffed a try that like you or I would have scored. That's saying something. And you know, at the time, it was the 25th minute or whatever, but just nonchalant. And it makes no difference to the result. And in the end, Penrith did have 3 tries in the first half. So in an outstanding position. So mark that as another bet that we make. We get much better odds than what it closes on game day, where it's like $1.60, $1.65 on every bookie. Then you get 3 tries in the first half, and you don't get there. But, you know, we went against the Cowboys' defense, and the Cowboys' defense has been really good this year. And I was well aware that the Cowboys had only let in 1 try in second halves in about the previous 5 or 6 weeks. So we went against that trend, thinking that Penrith was going to need, you know, 5 tries. And if I can critique our handicap there, often when you want to play a big favorite, and Penrith were about -14 at the time that we made the bets, you want to try and go against an opponent where they might fold and where you might get those cheap points late. And you like that extra opportunity to win, where if you don't blow them out, it could be reasonably close for like 60 minutes, 65, but then you get those couple of late tries. But the Cowboys knew they weren't meant to win. And it seemed clear that they were sort of like happy enough to not win, but to play hard for 80. So when they were down 16-0, they were never rattled. They never panicked. They just rolled their sleeves up and bit down on the mouthguard and hung in there. And you have to give their defense credit, because that's us doubting the Cowboys, and that's once again us losing. Now I think it's almost a Cowboys curse has moved on from a Warriors curse. We cannot win a bet in a Cowboys game this season. And although, yeah, I think we're on the right side, and we were right in saying that we didn't think North Queensland had a much chance, and they were dominated from start to finish. Yep. We'll still give them credit, because they will take something out from that game. They weren't at full strength and they had no ball all game and they hung tough. This was a really wild one as well. Your boys, 35, beat the Titans 24. That's after they were down 24-4. But take us through this match, Padonis, and your emotions.
Yeah, wow. This was a phenomenal game to watch. If you're a neutral fan, it was exciting. If you're a Broncos fan, it was even more exciting. Very, very shades of last year with the Gold Coast coming out hard. We said that this was going to be close to their grand final. They came out, scored a couple early tries. Jordan Rickey with an unlucky sin bin, I felt, in the first 10 minutes there. And they scored 2 tries when they had a man advantage, the Gold Coast, and they hit the lead. And Brisbane seemed a bit rattled and came out a bit slow, a bit frantic. And then just before halftime there, I think the Broncos got a sin bin back of their own, with McIntyre getting ruled out. And then about a minute later, East End Masters with the dumbest play that you'll ever see, just holding down, lying down on the play, the ball a metre out from his own try line. He had to go for a sin bin. A penalty wouldn't have been sufficient there. So they were down to 11 men, and Brisbane somehow couldn't score. And then David Fifita, in his first game back, runs out of dummy half for Brisbane, a slow for marker, and they don't push up off their line. And Fifita's awarded a try, which I still feel that he was held up. And they did check the try, and they went back to it, and they went with the on-field decision. But I don't know. To me, I thought there was a clear gap between the arm and the ball hitting the grass. But nonetheless, they awarded it. It was 24-4. And then from there...
Well, can I jump in and let's talk about that wild final 10 minutes of the first half, and then I'll let you take us through the second half. But the Titans just come out of the gates flying, as we said, you know, their grand final, and Brisbane slow off the mark, and it's 18-0. And Tino is having the game of the season by a prop, and I think he had over 200 metres in the first half and something like 18 runs in the first half alone. So 18-0 Titans, and they are knocking on the door again. If you get to 24-0 at that point, like, it's close to game over. Although knowing how weak this Titans team is, you wouldn't have said that, but it's a huge mountain to climb for Brisbane. Brisbane gets an intercept. They then make a little break. They get a penalty. The penalty, they then take the quick tap, gamble with the nous, and that sends a Titan to the sin bin. And you're going, oh, okay, it was just nearly 24-0, if not for the intercept. Now it's 18-0 and you're going to play against 12. Okay, Brisbane gets down the end. As you say, just pure stupidity by Masters, because he heard the ref say six again and he thought, well, you've said six again. You can't do any worse to me now. It's already zero tackle, so I'm just going to hold on till the end of the game if I can. And he just refused to let the player go. And the ref goes, well, I can do more than six again. I can send you as well. It's 13-11, and there's 8 minutes to go in the first half. And I'm thinking, how many tries will Brisbane score in these 8 minutes? Like, you can probably score nearly every set against the Titans team with 11 players, 13-11, and you're going to score here. You're on their goal line. And Brisbane did score. Brisbane scored that set. And you're going, whoa, okay, now it's 18-4. And they're receiving the kickoff with 7 minutes to go in the half. They'll score another two tries, I reckon. I reckon Titans will be lucky to stay in front. Brisbane drops the ball off the kickoff, or in the tackle one. And as you say, Fifita picks it up from dummy half and scores a try. Like, that is pretty ridiculous that an 11-man side scored against 13. Look, you couldn't see the angle of the grounding. So, you know, they went with the on-field decision. I actually thought it looked like a try. So, halftime score 24-4, which means Brisbane was outscored by 2 points while they played against 11, which is pretty crazy. From that point, the Titans had to win, and they're up 20, and they've withstood, you know, a horrible position to be in, and they get both their players back on in the first 2 minutes of the second half. How do they lose it from there?
Yeah, I don't think they ever got back into the grind and the arm wrestle. They should have came out and pretended the score was 0-0 and really got back into the grind. But to me, they seemed that they were retreating in defense. They weren't pushing up off their line again. And once Brisbane started getting a steamroll, then it was pretty hard to stop. And you touch on that when the Broncos did lose 6-4 with that man advantage. They had a couple of close calls as well, just before halftime, where Kate Wall's steaming down the sideline and all he has to do is just draw a pass and he muffs it. And then in the first minute after halftime, Corey Oates drops a bomb, which would have been a four-pointer as well. And then Brisbane did score after it went back to 13-13. And then the Gold Coast, we should talk about, which was another brain explosion, the short kickoff attempt from Osako off that grubber, thinking he was in the NFL. And then Brisbane pick it up and run down the entire field in the space of 5 seconds off the kickoff. And then before you know it, it's back on again. Brisbane don't have to chase points anymore, because I think at that point the score is 24-16 and the game's in the balance again. And you look up at the clock and you see 32 minutes or whatever it was. And that would have given them tremendous confidence. And then they just played off the back of their forward pack. And I think they really worked on their fitness in the offseason. That's one of the things Kevy said. And it happened in the Knights game as well last week, that they really got on the front foot and never looked back and ended up scoring some magic tries. Ezra Mamm stepped in well, and he's played good in his first two games. And don't forget, they're doing all this without Adam Reynolds as well. So it's a credit to the side. I think we should touch on Payne Haas as well. He was a bit rattled in that first half, I felt. he was getting booed every time he touched the ball from his own crowd. But then in the second half, he really showed his class. And every time he ran the ball, it was like 15, 20-meter runs. The guy's just an absolute machine. And Tino had a great first half, but I think he even said in the press conference he'd have his second half over again. He only had two runs in the entire second half and a couple errors. And he actually said that it was his decision to call that grubber off the try to try to go for a short kickoff attempt. But I don't know where the Cowboys – sorry, not the Cowboys. I don't know where the Gold Coast Titans go from here, sitting at three wins in the first 11 rounds. So it's definitely tough sledding, but Brisbane into the top four and first time they've won six in a row in about 15 years.
And you know what else Tino said in the press conference? That he didn't – he called for the short kickoff and then he didn't know the rule that he was allowed to play at it after it went 10. He thought it had to go 10 and bounce. So he didn't play at it. Pakes got it straight back. Pass to Ricky. That was 12 points in 60 seconds. It was actually 3 minutes later they gave up a try to Herbie Farnworth from dummy half, which I always think dummy half tries are pretty soft. So, Marcus has got to be awake. That was 18 points in 5 minutes. That was 24-22. Heaps of time to go. You know, it's anybody's game. Titans are in front, but all the momentum, all the energy of the crowd, and sure enough, Titans hit the front. Brisbane hit the front through Capewell, and then they sealed it with another try late. I think it was Mam. So the Titans blow a 20-point second-half lead. They are the only team, I heard, ever to blow two 20-point leads in the same season. So that is, yeah, it is pretty shocking for the Gold Coast, but a big win for the Broncos, considering they did it without Adam Reynolds, and now they go into a bye week. So it's fantastic times. And, yeah, Broncos fans' feelings are hurt with the news that Haas wants basically more money, and because he's been told he's not getting it, he said, well, he wants immediate release from his contract. It's hard because he's, you know, arguably Brisbane's best player, certainly best forward, and they're going so well. So the crowd, you know, should love him and should love everything he's doing. And his performance didn't dip. I thought he had a big game, even though it would have been a strange feeling for him. But, you know, but the crowd also wanted to voice their frustration. But maybe they'll stop booing him if Brisbane just keeps winning games. That, geez, they look so good. And Reynolds coming back, so they're going to lift them even further. We got back in the winner's circle with a couple of winning best bets here. And after a shocking start in Redcliffe, where the Knights 24 defeated the Warriors 16. And that's actually the first game that the Warriors have lost at Redcliffe. But, geez, they shot out of the block. They had two tries, and they were soft tries in the first 8 minutes, Padonis.
Extremely soft. I think Pompey and then Vallejo went over in the first 8 minutes. And you look up and it's 10-0 down. And we've got a first half bet as well as a Knights bet for the match. And that was one of the ones where you said in the chat that you twisted my arm to take that first half bet and was staring 10-0 down with half an hour to go. But I felt this game was pretty ugly and it was a back and forth contest. And we were right to take the underdog in the end because it was one of those games that could have went all the way and the points are valuable. I think the game was characterized by that conversion attempt from Reece Walsh where he slips and the ball goes 5 meters forward. It was a pretty scrappy affair. The Knights did pretty well in Mill's second game. They looked a lot better with the ball than they did last week. And their forward pack did get on top, which is one of the things that we did call for on Wednesday. And it was one of those games where I think Sean Johnson made a couple of errors himself. And every time there seemed to be some space, maybe short on confidence at the moment. He's just not taking the line on trying to take the space. He's happy to pass or kick the ball. And it just felt like there's a couple of times against us where if he just ran, he would have either made a line break himself or put someone else in a hole. So some things to work on for him. But the Warriors were okay. It was in a game that could have went all the way. But I've really felt it was the Knights' year. Oh, sorry, not the Knights' year. It was the Knights' season on the line in that one. And they did manage to grab that win and take some confidence out of it, even though it was a pretty scrappy contest.
Yeah, I think the Knights take a lot of confidence. And a big fan of the pod, Alex Leon, said, good week, guys. Are you counting the mixed matchups as best bets now? And so to clear that up, no, we're not mixed matchups. We don't count as best bets because, you know, you've seen the prices. It was $2.55 this week. Some of them are over $3. Keep a separate mixed matchup record. You can see for yourself how they've gone. I think just over 40% this year, which isn't great, but, you know, the plus money odds. Last season, 70%. It's so funny with the mixed matchups because last season I started losing the first 2 weeks. And sure enough, I got people saying, oh, why don't you count them as best bets? They should count as best bets. Then we won, you know, through the season, we had a period we won 13 of 14. nobody said, oh, the mixed matchup should count as best bets. Nobody seemed to say that anymore. In fact, I had people saying, oh, mixed matchups shouldn't be counted as profit because, like, they're special. You know, oh, so they shouldn't count. And then this year we started a bit slow with the mixed matchups. I think we didn't win the first couple weeks. And then people wanted them in the record again. So we keep them separate. But, you know, win or lose, try and make it really clear how we're going. And you can see it literally scrolling across the bottom of the screen. Our best bet record, which we've dragged up to 17-18, still not where we want to be, but it is a long season. Mixed matchup record must be 5-7 now. And multi-record pulled back 6 units this week. Bloody so quite close to that 32-1, but not to be. So we're still minus 15 units so far. But yeah, it's just one big multi can make a difference, but there's no guarantees. All we'll do is give ourselves the best chance we can. So horrible start. And the fact that the tries were so soft as well, I was really alarmed. But Newcastle got back in the game. Now I want to talk about when decisions go against us. Let's also talk about the try that got the Knights back in the game. Wasn't a try for me. Frizzell chasing a grubber in behind seemed to me pretty logical that he did not put that down cleanly. But this was the talking point all week, a Knights put down for a try. It was given a try on the field. The bunker didn't have the balls to overturn it. They looked at it very quickly and said Frizzell grounds the ball. And the commentators had said, oh, geez, that's a knock on. And for me, it's a knock on, and I'm desperate for the Knights to win. So, you know, that went our way, because if the Knights don't get that try, you know, maybe they drop their heads even more. Maybe they panic a bit. They finally got a bit of ball to end that half. And I will tell you, too, they will take a lot out of this game, because that Milford and Ponga connection genuinely looks electric. Clifford was back in the team, too. And every single time that a middle forward, someone like Barnett, dug into the line, threw it out the back to Milford, he came at the line. He had Ponga running off him. It looked unstoppable. And twice Milford tried to double bluff the defense and gave a short ball that was forward to Fitzgibbon. If he would have just passed to Ponga, I think they would have scored on both those occasions. And a couple of times when Ponga got the ball, he gave it to Tuala for a 2-on-1. And twice Tuala didn't pass and they would have scored. One time Tuala did pass and they did score a try. So it ended up being 12 all at halftime. And that's where the beauty of us getting the Knights when they were like a 2-point underdog during the week and getting that plus half a point in the first half, or plus 1.5 we got. But by kickoff, it's pick 'em. You can't bet that over $1.80. So that helps us win there. You know, getting that key number makes a difference. And second half, it was actually the Warriors who scored first, but then they dropped the kickoff. And the Knights, the very next play off the scrum. And I agree also, Johnson doesn't look his best. They've chopped and changed their halves a little bit. Maybe that's part of it. But this Warriors team, they do look a bit lost, and it's a shame because they're meant to be going back to New Zealand in a couple of weeks. And they would have wanted to take a bit of form home and to still have their season alive, but disappointing losses the last couple of games for sure. And just a total, two other points I want to make, just side notes, okay? And if Alexi's watching, he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There's 90 seconds to go. The Knights are up 24-16. The Warriors are knocking on the door of their try line. The Warriors get a penalty. Is any NRL team going to figure out that you take the two, you get within 6 points, and you will be receiving a kickoff down 6, and you will get a full set or the full minute to try and tie the game, and you can win. You can tie the game, you can win in Golden Point. Warriors already won a game Golden Point. If you tap with 90 seconds to go and you're down 8, I don't know what your plan is, how you're going to score twice in those 90 seconds. And they weren't the only team that made that mistake this weekend, as it happened. And Dom Young has been awesome for the Knights. The amount of times he carries the ball out of yardage and earns a penalty, I actually have a theory that it's his hair. His long hair, he shakes his body. The hair is like shaking so much. It's winning penalties that other players wouldn't get. That's my only theory. I can understand how many times he just takes a tough carry and it's a penalty and the Knights are out of trouble. Okay, another side that was in a lot of trouble was the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Another side we said, oh, we don't want to zoom in any closer on those two faces. Sorry. another team that we said was kind of season on the line here. If the Rabbitohs couldn't win this game, they're not going to be a finals team. And that would be a huge failure for a side that made the grand final last year. And they were down 12-0, but they recovered to win the game 44-18, which doesn't probably reflect how competitive it was for the first hour, but a win that the Bunnies had to have.
Yeah, for sure. They had to win the game, and you're right, the scoreline doesn't reflect the contest itself. And South started off a bit clunky, and I do think back to that 12-0 lead the Tigers had where Dane Laurie makes a half break on halfway and he gets ankle tapped when it would have been 18-0 for sure because he looked like he was home and hose there, and that would have completely flipped the switch on that. But second half, South started pretty hard, and the Tigers, again, they just can't seem to play an 80-minute performance, and once a few tries went against them, that it all really went against them. And I think South scored six tries themselves in the second half for a 44-18 lead. Alex Johnson with a hat-trick breaks Nathan Merritt's record in Indigenous round, 147 tries for South, which is great effort for him, and plenty more to come, I dare say. And I think the commentators have been saying he's got 80 more tries to get to Ken Irvine's all-time record, which is not out of the question. And just his ability to just manipulate space and get on the outside of a defender or get on the inside is great for a winger, and he's got great speed. So credit to him and credit to South. Cam Murray, I thought, was awesome in his first game back. Didn't really look like he missed a beat at all. And Damian Cook, you touched on it at the top of the show going through the Origin teams. I think a great performance from him on Saturday night almost gave his jersey back if it was in the balance with Coruscant and him. I thought he was great as well. And Cody Walker got a couple tries, and that would be great for their confidence also.
What's the name of that South swinger that now has the most tries?
Alex Johnson.
Alex Johnston?
Johnston.
Yeah. Is that what you said? No, it's just because, like, this guy is phenomenal. And actually, no one was mentioning his name for Origin, but he's a great clubman, and he has a chance to score the most tries in NRL history. He's still in his 20s. Like, if he still keeps going at even a modest rate for what he has done. But it does, and I must admit, I get player pronunciations wrong as well. And part of it is we do this live, and sometimes you know the player's name, but you just say it wrong. Like, I don't know why earlier I say Nico Hines when I know it's Nico Hines. But, you know, whatever reason, we get biased because we watch shows and listen to other shows where people mispronounce as well. But it does alarm me how many commentators and panelists call him Alex Johnson. Like, put some respect on the man's name. And he did have a hat trick, and his third try was the one that broke the game open, because this was 22-18 to Souths with 20 to go. And then Johnston got the hat trick. They scored three more after that. You mentioned the ankle tap on Laurie. There was also a moment where the Tigers were up 12-0 and they were spreading it on the Souths try line. And Souths had a hand on a Luke Brooks pass that pushed it back like 15 metres. And Souths recovered the ball, ran up the other end, got tackled and scored. And the ref missed it. And because it was live play, there was no challenge. And that's a huge moment. You just don't know if Souths had got into a bigger hole. You don't know how close they could have been to being upset there. But they'll be very happy that they regained control and had all the running in the second half. Another game that was really successful to us was the nightcap Saturday night. Sydney Roosters 36 beating the Cronulla Sharks 16 at Shark Park. And we had our two best bets here, which we swept as well, which was Sharks under 20.5, which had some nervous moments at the end, and Roosters plus half a try in the try handicap, and ended up, I think it was 7-3. Yeah, it was 7-3, and they were up 20-0 at halftime as well. So that one, this was good, kind of at least partially sweat free. And this also brought home the mixed matchup, which was Roosters and Knights to outscore Sharks and Warriors, both underdogs, but we did outscore them by 60 points to 32, I believe. But what was your biggest takeaway from this one? Because it promised to be a quality game. And in the end, it got interesting towards the end. But in the end, Roosters really showed that they're a better side than the Sharks, where a month ago, not many people believed that was the case.
Yeah, 100%. I think the game was characterized by how good the Roosters did play in that first half. It really took the game away from the Sharks and sucked the life out of the crowd. If you look at the stats at halftime, you just see Roosters were tackled in the Sharks 20 only four times, only had two line breaks, but somehow they had four tries, and the scoreline probably should have been a bit worse if Sam Walker had his kicking boots on. But such was the brilliance in the first half there of the Roosters scoring some long-range tries. Everyone was on. The forward pack dominated the Sharks pack. Tedesco had his best game, I felt, in a while, and Kieran Walker really stepped up. And some of the players were really in tune. Like, you talk about Suwali as one of the young kids and the young wingers coming through in the NRL, and he did, and he is likely to get an Origin reserve spot, which is credit to him. But I thought he played hard and tough, and that epitomised the entire performance of the Roosters. And they defended their line quite well in the second half. The Sharks had a few sets at 20-0 there, and the Roosters go up the other end, and Hargrave scores a bit of a sucker punch try. And at 24-0, you think it's all over. Maybe they drop their heads a little bit and allow the Sharks to come back. And it did end up being a sweat for us on the under 20.5. But overall, the Roosters were pretty dominant. And Fitzgibbon has to study again and try to get one back over at Robinson next time.
And the Sharkies have gone, I think, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss for the last couple of months. So they're going to try and find some consistency now. This was in front of a packed Shark Park, and they would have come in pretty confident, but the Roosters were the ones that showed up. They're just winning the tackles, winning the contact in defense and in attack, and that just led to opportunities to execute on the edges, and it was just star power of, you know, whether it be Joey Manu or Tedesco that were too much to handle that helped them build a big lead. And after withstanding, you know, a little bit of a counterpunch by the Sharks early second half, as you said, once they got to 24-0, I thought they were just going to continue to be ruthless, because this is a side you're kind of in direct competition for against to make the four as well. And you want to, you know, increase that that points differential disparity. But the Sharks fought back, you know, as a good side at home will do. It was striking to me how lightning fast the Sharks play the ball speed was. They really started to win all the contact, and they really started to come back, and they cut the game to 24-16. Now, I got a little issue here as well. McInnes scores 24-16, but he dropped it and he didn't re-grip the ball. They looked at it and, you know, it looked like a try, but when you watch the replay, it was very similar to the Gagai one. He had it. He was putting it down. He started to lose it, never re-gripped it, and just sort of pushed it towards the line. They took one look at it. The reason they took one look is because they knew they were wrong. They didn't want anyone to get too many chances to see it. And the bunker says, McInnes controls the ball and puts it down. Oh, so we don't even mention the regroup rule now. So I don't care that much exactly how they want to rule it. I think the regroup rule is on the harsher side of put downs. And sometimes you see a put down like the Gagai one, you think, geez, he didn't do much wrong there. But years ago, we used to have terrible put downs where the ball was fully spinning on someone's hand, but they would say, oh, there's no separation, so it's a try. And there were clear lost balls that would be given tries, and that's why they got harsher. But what just gets my goat, if that's a saying, is there's no consistency. Like, it goes to the bunker, and we all can watch it in slow motion and see what happened and have no idea what mood they're in and whether they're going to say it's a try or not. And it seems like they've folded under the pressure that they got criticized last week, even though Annesley said it was the right call. And then what happened? I just mentioned before, it went against us and for us, because Frizzell, he didn't score and they gave it a try. McInnes didn't score. They gave it a try. You know, I just hope it doesn't decide an Origin game, something like that. They just got to sort it out, just stay consistent with the way they rule it and not fold to the criticism. But a bit of a reality check for the Sharks, as I say, because the Roosters, I think, ultimately left no doubt that that they're a level above Cronulla right now. And Cronulla's going to get back Finucane, but guess what? The Roosters are going to get back Victor Radley. So this tough run of opponents, Roosters are navigating this because they're getting wins over some really quality opposition, such as Parramatta fortnight ago and now Cronulla. This game is the one that hurts to talk about Sunday, because we would have won our 32-1 and you would have won your five guys, and we would have won our best bet if we got a better start too, because we took +2.5 in the first half. And look, for what it's worth, closing line value, Canterbury, who I'm speaking about here, don't know why the screen's gone a bit funny there, but you can kind of see Dragons 34, Bulldogs 24. Look, Canterbury closed a 2.5-point underdog, so you're getting 2.5 in the first half. It is a very strong edge, but I'll just tell you why we didn't win the first half and why the Bulldogs went from 2-0 up to 16-2 down, because Matty Burton, who this is the first game that we've bet on the Dogs all year, because we have not been high on them at all. And when we've gone against them, I've hated going against Burton's kicking game. It's terrifying. And I was thinking, well, it's not going to be fun on the Dogs today, but I can't wait to have Matty Burton's kicking game on our side. It was the worst kicking performance we've ever seen. He would have been better if he got tackled on fifth tackle every time. He killed them with his kicking. And the other side of the kicking game, Matt Dufty can't catch. And yeah, he was looking into the sun in the first half. But guess what? The Dragons were looking into the sun the second half. I didn't see them drop one of Burton's bombs. So I don't know. It's important to have a fullback in the modern era, or probably any era, that can catch the ball. And I kind of blame ourselves because we bet on the Bulldogs. And I said this in the comment thread. I can't complain about Matt Dufty when I bet on the Bulldogs. And I knew they had Matt Dufty when I bet on them. But that kicking display by Burton, first bomb he puts up, I'm frothing to watch this. It goes 20 meters too far. Okay, he had a breeze behind him. Does he recalibrate? No, his next kick sails into the in-goal. Does he recalibrate the third one? Nope, it's into the in-goal as well. So these are seven tackle sets off the back of attacking Bulldogs raids. And then just to put the nail in the coffin, after the Bulldogs give up a couple of tries, he kicks the kickoff out on the full. And the Dragons come back and score again. Having said all that, the Bulldogs, who were 18 of 18 completions in the first half, so I can't imagine a team being 18 from 18 and being down 10, they actually took the lead within 10 or 15 minutes into the second half from being down 16-2. So again, that's kind of annoying. You take a first half line. But I think it was ultimately the errors that crept in the second half, just when you can't afford to have them. Like when the Bulldogs did hit the front at 18-16, similar to New Zealand on Saturday, they dropped the ball returning the kickoff, and then the Dragons scored instantly. And this Belmore effect, and one of the reasons we took the Dogs, it's a real thing. And the crowd was really amped. If the Bulldogs, having been down 14 points and now in front, could have played with the lead, they really would have harnessed that momentum. But they didn't put the Dragons under any pressure, because the Dragons were allowed to be handed a try straight afterwards by virtue of that error. So that's unfortunate. And even then, after the Dragons did score again and got back in front, scored a couple more times, then the Dogs score again. And with 10 minutes to go, the Dogs are within 4 points, could still win the game for our multi. They get a penalty. The crowd's gone wild. They get up the Dragons' end. They're going to throw the kitchen sink for the final 7 minutes. No, they're not. They spilled their lollies. Second tackle and then concede after that. Since I've kind of just hijacked this whole breakdown, might as well keep going. I want to also talk. I don't want to just talk about the team we bet on, because I feel like we don't talk about the Dragons each week. And there's a trend that I don't think we've backed the Dragons in a single game for 12 weeks this year. So I think we need to also acknowledge that a side is better than we give credit. And that, is there a reason why we keep looking at this Dragons team sheet each week and we're not thinking that's a team I want to back? Maybe collectively they're a bit better than we give them credit for. I think the Dragons are like this typical solid team that plays like a B every week. And if the opponent is on, and if the opponent plays an A, they win. And if the opponent's off their game, they lose. And they don't give their opponent anything easy. And I think you got to give a bit of credit to that to the Dragons, who are now 6-6, and they're in the finals hunt. But honest, anything to add after I said quite a lot?
Yeah, you did. That's right. You summed it up pretty well there. And fuck, it was a frustrating watch for everyone who was on the Dogs, because it just felt like one of those 50-50 games, and we fell on the wrong side of it for a few of those reasons. And I think the first half did harm them. Dogs made too many errors, and they never seemed to be able to defend their line with some really soft tries. And Blake Laurie gets his first try in, I think, 90 games. And Alex Twell will be looking at him thinking, fuck, when's my turn next? But it just... I don't know. The crowd was great there in the Dogs' favour. When they hit the lead, I felt so good in that second half. We had that 30-1 multi, and even though we lost our best bet and the five guys, I really felt like the Dogs were going to harness that crowd and come home strong. But time and time again, they just couldn't seem to put them away. I think so many breaks they made. There was a break that Burton made on the inside there, and the ball found its way to Karaz. And if it was just 10 centimetres high, he would have picked it up off his bootlaces and probably scores. And then Adokar goes through and couldn't find a pass. And I don't know, it's just a frustrating watch. And I don't think the Dragons did enough to win the game in the second half. I just felt like the Dogs gave it away. But the Dragons were good in the first half, even though Burton handed them a lot of possession. And they never came out of their own end. And that's one of the takeaways that I found. They were never put under any strain or pressure. And unfortunately for us, it was one of those frustrating watches. And you touch on the line value, but it did close 2.5 for the match. And Tevita Pengo Jr. got ruled out as well before kickoff, which was pretty tough for us I would have loved to have him there rampaging through the back line there, but wasn't to be. One of those games where I think we're on the right side, but doesn't show in the result.
Yeah, like absolutely. They had a chance to win the game second half, so that's why it hurt. You mentioned Karaz. Boy, he was close there, just spilled that ball when they had a massive break and a massive overlap. He's a bright spot, though. He looks like a true star out there for the Dogs. So at least there's something there for Canterbury. Let you speak about this game. Parramatta 28, Canberra 20, and we cash our seventh best bet of the round, which was -2.5 with the Eels.
Yeah, so we had -2.5, which was a great edge on Wednesday, and it did close 5.5 on most places. And we talk about team news affecting us or being in our favour, but this one went against us with Jamal Fogarty named an hour before kickoff playing his first game for the Raiders this year, which was a big in for them.
I think we knew he was going to be in. Maybe it was still questionable, but yeah, I at least I'm pretty sure that he was in the squad, so it was likely he was going to return on Wednesday. Yeah,
he was in the squad, but then when I was listening to Ricky Stewart early in the week, Ricky Stewart did say he's probably going to give him another week, but okay. maybe that was a bit of smoke and mirrors there. But in the end, it didn't matter for us. I think we always talk about trying to get the handicap spot on, and we just want to be 50-50 in those 50-50 handicaps. And I think this one was one of those handicaps where it was a 50-50 game. It could have went either way. And I think if Canberra won the game or covered the line, I don't think we could have been too hard done by. It was one of those games where it was in the balance for long periods of time. I think a few of the Canberra tries were a bit soft if you're an Eels fan. And I think back to the Gutherson mistake as well, which led to that try there just before half time. And then the Eels as well, they bombed that try on half time. Couldn't find the pass to Simonson. It was just a bit behind him when he had the try line open as the halftime siren was sounding, which would have given the Eels the lead. But I don't know what Canberra were thinking just after halftime, getting a penalty and 2 points up, going for two. It just seemed a bit crazy to me. Maybe
you want me to tell you what it was?
Go for it.
So the Raiders are winning 20-18 at halftime because the Eels didn't score that try. And we've got -2.5. So the Raiders are thinking, how can we screw the pod? Well, we're up two. So if we kick a penalty, we go up four. Now it's more than a converted try for the pod to cover their bet. That could be the only thing I could think. That was instantly what went through my mind. I said, that makes no sense to take the two there, but that will come back to bite us. And it would have if the Raiders had got a late converted try. But luckily for us, Parramatta did score the final two tries of the second half.
Yeah, they did. And after all that pressure that they withstood, I think Canberra had 61% of possession and territory in the second half. And then it was a great short ball to Sean Lane steaming through, found Brown, who had a great game himself. And Brown scores to send it to 28-20. And Parramatta, again, characterised the entire second half. They defended their line towards the end. And even when they tackled Jack Wyden off that bomb with about 2 minutes to go, Mitch Moses and all the players were fist bumping and celebrating. It was a good effort for them. I think it was their first win in a while. For the Eels, instead of going win-loss, it was their first back-to-back win. And they do see themselves as a top four side, and that was one of our reasons for taking them to sort of buck the trend against this recent Canberra resurgence. But plenty of respect for Canberra still, and I don't take anything away from them either out of this game.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was very deflated going into this one because I think if you didn't watch the Bulldogs-Dragons game, you didn't realise how frustrating that was and how close the Dogs come to winning. But then you come into this game and it was actually a sensational game. And I am so impressed by the Raiders turning their season around. They were nearly dead in the water a month ago. They won three in a row, including some really impressive upsets. And they did not disgrace themselves today. But we said going into this game, we didn't really want to bet against the Raiders at home. We just wanted to bet on Parramatta. And luckily they did enough. And it was Dylan Brown who was a superstar today in a weekend where everyone's talking about origin stars. It was the Kiwi half that controlled the game. Ultimately, it was the difference from Parramatta being down, whatever they were down, like I said, 20-18, and end up obviously getting in front 28-20 against the run of play in the second half. Yeah, 20-16 they were down. No, 18-16, I think it must have been that. Or whatever. 20-16 after the Raiders penalty goal is what I was thinking. But It was against a run of play. They were under the pump all that second half. So under assault, but they get the two breakaway tries. I did notice one of the breakaways, Fogarty got left completely flat-footed for Lane to go through. So you bring a guy back in who hasn't played football for a long time. You do sometimes, it does sometimes hurt in some ways. Even though longer term, I'm sure Raiders will be in good stead to bring Fogarty in. And again, in this game, this time it was a little bit different. There was about 4 minutes to go and the Raiders got a penalty. I still think you've got to take the two. You cut the lead to six and then you go again within the final 3 or 4 minutes and you try and score a converted try. I can't understand the logic in not taking those points and still thinking you're going to get down that end twice and score twice. If Alexi's watching, he'll know.
Just on that one as well, maybe with the rule change with the 2-point field goal, maybe some teams are happy to try and score knowing that they're already on the try line instead of having to get down there. And then if the time is expiring, they can try for a 40-meter field goal. I don't know. Maybe that's...
Yeah, that's fair. I actually don't think that much consideration goes into it. But I think if they thought that hard about it, they'd still figure out just taking the certain two and cutting it to a one-score game is so valuable. And knowing that you receive possession off the kickoff too, you can just throw a kitchen sink. But nevertheless, they didn't. I wanted them to take the two as well because it would have cut the lead to six, but less likely that they would have got like a backdoor try that cut in and just hurt our line bet. But luckily, that one got up. So overall, a great round. Look, we've done an extra long pod. We talk about. I think you made a great point there that we're not going to gloat and say, oh, we were definitely right about the Eels because they could have lost today or they definitely could have won a narrow victory and not covered. It was a game that was kind of – the cover was in the balance late, and we're glad that a tight one and one that's decided by under a converted try in terms of who won the line goes our way. But you're right about us wanting to find good bets. Look, little funny side note, Podonis, some motivation for us to keep building now. We're close to halfway. 5-2, pretty good record on our best bets this week. You know, obviously could have been better. You send me your leans and likes before the round. I just looked back at what you sent me on Wednesday and there was 6 suggested best bets before we did the round 12 pod. Do you know how many of them actually ended up winning?
No, go for it. Tell me.
None of them. So in that regard, we did pretty well to get out of this round 5-2. So we know we can improve on that for sure. And we'll try and do that. And as I say, look out for some Origin content. Thanks for sticking with us on, big round 12 recap. Only 4 games to preview. So I'll promise you guys we'll do a shorter preview pod on Wednesday where we go after we've been back in the lab. So thanks for joining me as always. But honest, thanks for joining us, everybody who tunes in, whether you watch or listen. Always gamble responsibly. Have a good week. We'll see you Wednesday. Lego.
Lego.